मिनन्दस्या ज्वालाञ्जनसलकया चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनविष्टां स्फीतं येन भूतले सायं प्रपदमायं ददाति सवनन्तिकम्। Today we'll speak on texts 28-31, but I'd like to just go over the verses of the prayers of Queen Kunti so that we can remember them. So in the first of Kunti's prayers, I'll read the English. She says, O Krishna, because Krishna is just about to leave. He's sitting upon the chariot, ready to begin going back to his place of Dwaraka, which is far, far away, thousands of miles away, actually, from Hastinapur. And Krishna is just about to leave after participating or being at the Pandava's side through so many trials and tribulations for so many years. And now he's going back to Dwaraka. And Kunti Devi says, first glorifying him, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. Although you are inside and outside and everywhere, no one can see you due to the covering of Maya. You are invisible to the foolish observer. Even when one sees Krishna, because of the covering of Maya, one cannot recognize him, just as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service into the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? We're not in that condition. But yet we see you. How can we know you? And then Kunti Devi's hint, Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namah. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudev, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda and the other coward men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses. Because Krishna can only be understood and seen when he chooses to allow himself to be seen, and that he is inclined to do when the living entity exhibits devotion. And then Kunti Devi shows that Krishna is in every way like a lotus, although in the world, not situated actually in the world, beautiful like a lotus, soft, kamal, cooling. Because in the material world, everyone is burning. Anxiety and difficulties. It's meant to be that way. And there's nothing we can do about it, practically speaking. We can try to push this aside so we get what we want. And we should try to pull this closer so we can have that thing that we want. But we will find that we will still not be happy because it's the very nature of the material world. But Krishna, through the burning of the material world, is cooling like a lotus flower. My respectful obeisance is unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cooling as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. O Rishikesh, Master of the Senses and Lord of the Lords, you have released your mother Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kamsa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. My dear Krishna, your Lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings due to our exile in the forest, from the battle where great generals fought, and now you have saved us from the weapon of Asatan. Amazingly enough, after glorifying Krishna for saving the Pandavas and herself from all the calamities, now Kunti says, I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Because Krishna is leaving. Better to see Krishna in the midst of danger and to be always saved by Krishna from the danger than to be perfectly situated as the most opulent personage. Because by seeing Krishna, even looking at it from the point of being saved, seeing always Krishna will save one from bhava, puna bhava, darshanam, by seeing Krishna freed from birth and death. So Kunti Devi is lamenting that Krishna is leaving, and she'll explain that a little later. So how to actually see Krishna always? How to be in Krishna's presence always? Kunti Devi says, my Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached. It's easy to be with Krishna. But only by those who are materially exhausted, who do not have even a pinch of desire to enjoy in the material world. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feelings, completely dependent. My obeisance is unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. So not only can Krishna be approached by one who doesn't desire anything in the material world, but Krishna actually becomes purchased by such devotion that is enriched with purity. Anyabhirasita sunyam jnanakama anavrita. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. So though Krishna is there right before Kunti, his being there has nothing to do with why any conditioned soul is present in the material world. You are self-satisfied, Kunti Devi says. That means that Krishna is self-satisfied, that he has no reason to obtain anything. He's the supreme Atmaram. When he comes to the material world, it is not to gain anything, because he already is everything and he already has everything. And it's beyond the reactions of the modes of material nature, again showing that when that Krishna is acting, and this will come up a little later, he's acting most inconceivably by his free will. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle. That's an interesting little point right there. Gentility comes only when one is self-satisfied, when one is happy with oneself, within oneself. If one is angry, etc., that means that the material modes of passion are whipping him into dissatisfaction. When so many desires are blazing in our heart, no one will be self-satisfied, and therefore anger will come. You are the most gentle, and you are the master of the monists. Today, first verse. What else is Krishna? Kunti Devi is glorifying Krishna as the master of the monists. That means that he himself, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham Amritasya Vyasya, that he is that which Brahman is situated upon, and is the platform which Brahman rests upon. That he is the source of Brahman, and Brahman rests upon him. So therefore, Krishna's relationship with Brahman has just been explained. And now, Krishna's relationship, actually, that Paramatma is part of Krishna, and therefore the Paramatma is Krishna in the Paramatma form. So, manye tvam kalamisanam manadi nidanam vibhum samam charantam savatra bhutanam yan mitakali. Kunti Devi says, manye, I consider tvam, your lordship, kalam, the eternal time. Your lordship is ishanam, the Supreme Lord, anadi nidanam, without beginning and end. Just listen to these qualities of Krishna and remember that this person who is the Lord of everything, he's eternal time, because the kala shakti is one of the features of the Paramatma. Because time is required in the material world, because time connects the karma of the living entity with the material ingredients. Without time, one's karma doesn't fructify. So he's eternal time. And this is the business of the Paramatma, actually. And when the Mahavishnu, who is the Paramatma of the entirety of material creation, when he starts the material creation by injecting the living entities within the womb of matter, aham bilabada bida, the time shakti, the kala shakti, is also put into place at that time. And then immediately matter starts interacting. When the living entities, their karma and matter and the time factor are all together, then the material world starts to be formed. So, look at these qualities, that he's kalam, ishanam, the Supreme Lord, anadi nidanam. He has without no beginning and an end. Just imagine looking at someone who's sitting on a chariot who doesn't have a beginning and an end. Everything that we can see has a beginning and an end. So how is it possible that that person sitting on a chariot is beginningless and endless, not only in time, but in every fact? There's no beginning to his manifestation and there's no end. He's all pervading. Samam, he is equal in distributing mercy, equally merciful, charanantam, in distributing his mercy. Savatra, he's sitting on the chariot, yet he's everywhere. Bhutanam, yat mita kali, he's the one that's causing, in one sense, the fructification. If he's the cause of all causes, and it is because of him as the time factor, and he as the super soul in everyone's heart, as therefore the living entities receive their karma, yet their karma, or the reactions, the happiness and misery that everyone experiences, isn't caused by him. So that's what Kunti Devi is saying. It's caused by them. Although he's everywhere and the supreme controller and knows everything, he's the cause of all causes, he's not the cause of the living entity's suffering or joy. Otherwise, he would be partial. This is also described in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. How Krishna is the impartial super soul, and although everything is happening, maya dakshena pakriti, under Krishna's supervision, yet, and although he's the cause of all causes, yet he is just the sanctioner of the karma of the living entity. He does not cause the living entity's suffering or happiness. Krishna, and he's sitting on the chariot. And Kunti Devi is offering prayers and glorifying him like this. He's not an ordinary person. He's the most extraordinary Supreme Person. Therefore, Kunti Devi says, "My Lord, I consider your lordship to be eternal time." Now, she's just spoken about him as being the property of the materially impoverished. He's so powerful and the greatest protector and the one who frees everyone from birth and death. And he's the property of the materially impoverished. And he is the Paramatma who is everywhere. He's eternal time, the supreme controller without beginning and an end, the all-pervasive one. And he's sitting on the chariot and he's all-pervading. Can you conceive of that? Is it possible to conceive of someone localized and all-pervading? No, because Krishna is inconceivable. You are equal to everyone. Does it look, when we look at the world, we see plants. There's a soul in that plant body. And there's weeds, beautiful blossoming gardenia, fragrant gardenia plants, and there are weeds, and there are bugs, and there are rich men, there are poor men, there are ugly men, there are crippled men, there are ladies, there are giants, there are pygmies, there are blonde, blue-eyed folks, and there are dark folks, and this kind and that kind. Some enjoy, some suffer, some are shot, some are cruel, some are evil, some are good. He's all powerful and he's equal to everyone. This is truly amazing. How is it that Krishna is equal to everyone? Prabhupada explains in the purport. Eternal time is the witness of all our actions, good and bad. And thus, resultant reactions are destined by him. It is no use saying that we do not know why and for what we are suffering. We may forget the misdeeds for which we may suffer at this present moment, but we must remember that Paramatma is our constant companion, and therefore he knows everything, past, present, and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, he is the supreme controller also. Without his sanction, not a blade of grass can move. So he is sanctioning, but he is just sanctioning the reactions to actions that we have previously performed. And we are getting those reactions. But still it is under Krishna. Nothing can happen, not even a blade of grass, not a mosquito can bite, without Krishna allowing it to occur. Yet, because he's allowing it to occur, it is not that he's desiring it to occur. Just like the judge, when some criminals escape from the prison, he puts them, he says, "You have to go into solitary confinement. You add 5 more years to your sentence. You cannot get paroled." Does that mean that the judge is angry at the prisoners and it's his fault and he's being partial, or he's punishing them? Is it he who's punishing them? No. They've broken the law, and therefore it is their own activities that are causing their own suffering. And some of the criminals, the real hardened ones, is thinking, "Oh, that judge, he's really put me in the clink. He's locked me up." But it's not, because people who have that mentality, they never become free, they never become rectified, because they don't take responsibility for their own situation. Rather, yes, I've done this wrong and therefore I'm getting some punishment. I don't want to get punished anymore. I just all have to do is don't act improperly anymore. So although we don't know exactly what we've done wrong that is giving me this specific reaction that I've gotten, that I'm getting. But we know that because the Kal Shakti, or the Bhagavatam describes so many witnesses, ultimately the Super Soul in the form of the Kala Shakti, or he's everywhere, where there is nothing we can do in private. There is no privacy in this world. We cannot sin or do good in private. Everything is witnessed. Anumanta, means the permitter. Upadrashta means the overseer. Upadrashta anumanta cha bharta bhukta maheshvara paramatmati chapyukto dehis min, in everybody. Purusha para. So, we don't know exactly what we did wrong to put that gets us into this situation. We may know, we may not know. But yet we know that everything we've done is witnessed, and under Krishna's maya dakshena prakriti, under the direction, under the supervision of Krishna, that we're getting our destiny. That is called destiny. No one is therefore either an enemy or friend of the Lord. Everyone is suffering and enjoying the results of his own destiny. This destiny is made by the living beings in the course of social interaction and our dealings. Everyone here wants to lord it over the material nature. This is the cause, this is the problem. And thus everyone creates his own destiny based on this desire to lord it over material nature. As soon as we lose that desire, our karma is finished, basically. And thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and therefore he can see everyone's activities. And because the Lord has no beginning or end, He is known also as the eternal time Kala. So this is Krishna. She's praying to Krishna. She knows who Krishna is, even though he is her nephew. She knows his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Paramatma, the Kaivalya Patye Nama, the master of liberation, of monism. Kunti Devi continues. And yet he's sitting there, this supreme control, the Supreme Lord. He's done so many things in his life. And she has witnessed those. Because he can do whatever he wants and he's not under any control, it doesn't mean that he does nothing. He does specific things. And therefore, O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and so misleading. Because, again, he is not under the control of the laws of material nature. He is acting completely freely, and yet he is acting. So why does he choose to do one thing and not another? It's his free will. This is the personality of Godhead. Personality means characteristics. Characteristics means you are one thing and not you, you are not another. So Krishna, out of his own free will, is Krishna. And he has qualities and characteristics. So it is, no one can understand the depths of Krishna. They appear to be human, so human, Naralila. They appear to be human, but they are not human. He's playing, he's doing so many things. You have no specific object of favor, and going back again to the point of how he's dealing as Paramatma with the living entities in the material world. No one has a specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. In Prabhupada's purport, He explains three different types of people. And he explains how Krishna is partial, or rather impartial. But actually, Krishna is not impartial. But as Prabhupada explains in the last verse of the purport, the last sentence, therefore, the two sentences, therefore the conclusion is that the Lord is never partial. It is wrong for the people in general to think of him as partial. But actually in the Bhagavad Gita he says, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, that I am equal, impartial when dealing with all living entities. Name dveshastina priya. Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktiya. But when it comes to my devotees, I specially live in them and they live in me. I am partial to my devotees. So therefore, as Prabhupada explains, there are three kinds of living entities. One, who have completely turned their back on Krishna. Krishna treats them completely equally. But it is not his desire to just give them the reactions for their activities, but it is their desire to turn their back on Krishna in the same way that when the sun is shining brightly and we can get so much benefit from the sunlight and the ultraviolet rays, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, if we go in our door, close the blinds, close the curtains, what can the sun do? It is our aversion to Krishna, to the sun, that has caused us to be in darkness. So similarly, our aversion to Krishna places us under the firm control of our destiny, our karma, which is under Krishna's sanction. That's one kind. Then another kind of personality, he turns to Krishna. But Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritino Arjuna. He's a Sukritin, he's a pious person. He turns to Krishna when he wants something. So he goes out into the sun to get a specific thing from the sun. Arta Gigyasa Artati Gyanicha. Either he is in distress, he's Arta Arti, he wants something material, some material benefit, money, this, that. Or he's curious, or a jnani, but wanting something. This is the third kind. So, generally speaking, when someone wants something from God, it is like the relationship with the shopkeeper. You go there, you do something for the shopkeeper, you give him some money and you get something, and then you walk out and the relationship is finished. But that's not Krishna's reason. He doesn't want that, actually. He wants that people come to him even for material things, the kama sava kama va moksha kama udaradi. But then, to stay in the sunlight of his merciful association. That's what he wants. Because that is good for the living entity. It is good for us to stay in the sun of his mercy continuously. But the third kind of devotee is the pure devotee, who doesn't want anything from Krishna, but just simply wants to make Krishna happy. His happiness is Krishna's pleasure. That's the pure devotee. So, how Krishna, as Prabhupada explains, Krishna deals with these different devotees differently. But it is not due to his partiality that he deals with them differently, but it is due to such partiality in receiving the Lord's mercy is relative to the recipient. And it is not due to the partiality of the all-merciful Lord. His mercy is equally distributed, but different people deal with that mercy differently. And Srila Jiva Goswami, he says that he is partial to all his parts and parcels. That means that Krishna's partiality is to everyone who wants to take advantage of it. And he's trying all the time to bring us to the position of pure devotion so that he can give us his full partiality, bestow his full mercy upon us. And the purpose of the material world and all the suffering and all the enjoyment, which is a necessary part of the material world. It is a necessary part of the material world. We want the kingdom of God, but we don't want God there. We just want the pleasures there. There's an old saying by the American writer Mark Twain. Hell for company, heaven for climate. That if you want to associate with people who would like to have fun, you go to hell. But the climate's much better in heaven. So you get a little bit of both. You take for the kind of people who want you can have a good time with, you get the people going to hell. And for climate, though, you go to heaven has a better climate because in hell you burn. But that type of a mood in approaching God, self-centered and selfish, does not get us. As long as our pleasure, selfishness, is in the center, we must stay in the material world. So therefore, Krishna is so kind, although it doesn't feel like it's kindness, but our faith is that it is kind. He always keeps things in somewhat turmoil, so we cannot be fully satisfied and happy in the material world to the moment of death. There's always some difficulty. Why? Why does it hit both rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief? It hits everyone. Because it's the nature of the material world, and that's Krishna's mercy. That is Krishna's impartiality. That everyone gets challenged beyond their ability to control. And therefore, Krishna is telling us, you come to me, you come to me, you come to me, and you come to me. Because only by coming to me will you be happy. When you give up, when you try to make me happy, because, and what's the example given? The mouth is the proper way to feed all the body. We are connected to Krishna just like the hands and the arms and the neck and the toes are connected to the whole body. So the proper way to feed the whole body is putting food in the mouth. The proper way to water the leaves of the tree is to water the root. So similarly, the proper way to nourish our own existence is to serve Krishna. And Krishna's only desire is to bring us to him. And therefore, the devotee interprets everything in that fashion. He sees Krishna, yomam pashyati sarvatra. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, tasyaham sulabhaparta, I'm easy to obtain. Tatenu kampam susumikshamano. So, for the people in general, they can't think of Krishna as partial, that, oh, he likes these people because he's giving them wealth and riches, and these people, he's sending a flood and a hurricane and hailstones because he's angry at them. No. He's being merciful to everyone. But actually, he's being merciful mostly to his devotees. But he wants his mercy to everyone is that he's bringing everyone to be a devotee. So we should take advantage of that. So the verse again was Kunti Devi saying that Krishna's dealings are very hard to understand. And although he's doing all that and all that is going under his supervision, yet there he is sitting on the chariot. And how is it, amazingly enough, that his devotees, like the Pandavas, suffered so much? Quite amazing. His dealings are so hard to understand. Text 30. A Of course it is bewildering. O soul of the universe, O Paramatma, O soul of the universe, that you work although you are inactive. Bewildering, Prabhupada explains in the purport, the first line of the purport, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are not only bewildering, but they are also apparently contradictory. In other words, they are all inconceivable to the limited thinking power of a human being. So they're not only bewildering, they're contradictory, and they're inconceivable. Listen, you are the soul of the universe. You work. It is you who is doing everything, but yet you are inactive. You do nothing. Can you be inactive and active simultaneously? No. Can anyone? No. But Krishna's doing it anyway. Is that possible? No. Well, that doesn't stop Krishna from doing it. And you take birth, although you are the vital force and the unborn. Can the unborn take birth? By definition, the unborn is unborn. Those who have taken their birth, yes, the one who takes his birth, those are the people who take their birth, not the unborn takes birth and the undying dies. No. You yourself descend amongst animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. So Krishna comes, we have heard in the third chapter of Krishna's different incarnations. So amongst animals, he comes as Lord Varaha. Amongst men, he comes as Lord Ram, or Krishna. Sages, Naranarayan Rishi, aquatics, even comes as Matsyadev, as the fish. Now, this is quite bewildering. Now, why would the Supreme, who is Supreme, means that you don't have to do anything forced by anyone else. If you're the Supreme, you're in control. So then why would you come as a fish? And then as a fish, what would you do? Or as a man, or as a boar, Varahadev, Sukara? You come as, of all things, a boar, a hog? Now, this is truly amazing. Bewildering, contradictory. You're not being forced, and yet you do it out of your own free will. And what do you choose to do out of your own free will? You become a hog, Sukara, Varahadev. And while you're there, you kill Hiranyaka, and you lift the earth on your tusks. This is truly amazing. And the Brahmanas worship you with the Vedic hymns. And when you shake, you ever see a hog shake his body when he's wet? So because the Lord Hog Varaha came out of the water, his body was wet, and he shook, and that some of his hairs came out and landed in different places. And those places, just by his hair coming out, they became holy places of pilgrimage. I think in Navadvip, there's some pastime, very much Navadvip is connected with Lord Varahadev, yes? Maybe it's Ranagat. Yes, isn't it? Yes, it is. On the Koladweep. Yeah, Koladweep. There's a place where I think Lord Ra came even. So although no one can understand him, every action of the Lord is bewildering to the common man. How is this possible? Oh, why is he doing this? Why would the Pandavas? It's so bewildering. His devotees were the Pandavas and they had so much difficulty. He comes as Lord Ram and he's banished from the kingdom. Is that bewildering? He's the Supreme Lord and he's banished? He has to go live in the forest? It's quite quite amazing. But his pastimes are all wonderful. And they are all exhibitions of his internal energy. everything happening to Krishna is wonderful. The devotees therefore know that although he appears amongst the animals, he is not an animal, nor a man, nor a rishi, nor a fish. He is eternally the Supreme Lord in all circumstances. So it's wonderful and bewildering and astounding how Krishna does these things. He comes and he takes on these forms. But even more astounding and bewildering than Krishna coming as Lord Varaha or Lord Matsya or Narayan Rishi. What is Narayan Rishi famous for? Austerity. So God is performing austerities? No need. But he's doing it. So bewildering, so amazing, but even more amazing, Kunti describes in the next verse. My dear Krishna, Yasoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense. And your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes. And you were afraid, although fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. So when Lord Varaha dives into the depths of the Kapadak Ocean, he's so powerful, he lifts up the entire earth with his tusks. And Matsya becomes so huge. I can't remember how huge, but it's like hundreds of thousands of miles in size. But look what Krishna does, that's even more amazing and more bewildering. He allows his mother to chastise him. And not only does he allow his mother to chastise him, he's afraid when his mother's chastising him, like a little child is afraid when his mother chastises him. And not only is he afraid, but tears are coming from his eyes. Out of fear, he's crying. And not only is he afraid and crying, and tears are coming from his eyes, but his kajal, the ointment, the mascara on his eyes is running down his face. And he's all pervading, and he's the Supreme Lord, and he's the controller, and he's Kala, and he's impartial to everyone. So Kunti Devi is astounded by this pastime of the Lord even more than the other pastimes. Prabhupada explains in his purport. Here is another explanation of the bewilderment created by the pastimes of the Lord. The Supreme Lord is the supreme in all circumstances, as already explained. Here is a specific example of the Lord's being the supreme, and at the same time, a plaything in the presence of his pure devotee. The Lord's pure devotee renders service unto the Lord out of unalloyed love only. We heard about the three kinds of ways that people deal with the Lord. So here the pure devotees deal in this way. They serve Krishna and act only for his pleasure, not wanting to get anything for themselves. They render service unto the Lord out of unalloyed love only, and while discharging such devotional service, the pure devotee forgets the position of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord also accepts the loving service of his devotees more relishably when the service is rendered spontaneously out of pure affection without anything of reverential admiration. Generally, the Lord is worshipped by the devotees in a reverential attitude. But the Lord is meticulously pleased when the devotee, out of pure affection and love, considers the Lord to be less important than himself. The Lord's pastimes in the original abode of Golok Vrindavan are exchanged in that spirit. The friends of Krishna consider him one of them. They do not consider him to be of reverential importance. The parents of the Lord, who are all pure devotees, consider him a child only. The Lord accepts the chastisement of the parents more cheerfully than the prayers of the Vedic hymns. Similarly, he accepts the reproaches of his fiancées more palatably than the Vedic hymns. When Lord Krishna was present in this material world to manifest his eternal pastimes of the transcendental realm of Golok Vrindavan as an attraction for the people in general, he displayed a unique picture of subordination before his foster mother, Yashoda. The Lord, in his naturally childish, playful activities, used to spoil the stock butter of Mother Yashoda by breaking the pots and distributing the contents to his friends and playmates, including the celebrated monkeys of Vrindavan, who took advantage of the Lord's munificence. This is very difficult for a mundane person to understand about God. Just imagine you join the Hare Krishna movement from a nice Christian family or something like that, and you're trying to explain to your parents who Krishna is and what God is and what he does, and you're explaining that he steals butter and he feeds it to the monkeys. Now, what will they think? They will think you're crazy. Because only the devotees can actually understand this. Very, very difficult to understand how this is the most glorious and full explanation of who God the Supreme Controller is, that he actually becomes subservient to the love of his devotees, and this is what makes him the most attractive personality. Otherwise, if he's just God on high on the big throne, just he's impartially giving you, you've done bad for this. At the beginning of your life you did this bad, therefore you have to trip and fall on your nose. And you've done this bad in five lives ago, and for that you have to be hit by a car. And you've done this good, you gave some charity, and therefore you're going to get some money like that. What? No one may act very nicely when confronted with such a God, but because there's no love and no mercy shown, he's not all attractive. But when the Lord himself becomes controlled by his devotees and becomes subservient to his devotees, when the love of the devotee becomes the dominant factor and even becomes more powerful than the Lord, then that God who's subservient to the love of his devotees, he is all attractive. And this we will hear about more. We hear about that in Bhijma Dev, chapter 9. We hear about that in chapter 10. The Lord leaves. Eventually Krishna will leave Hastinapur, and there'll be prayers of the ladies of Hastinapur on the roof. We'll hear about that, and then we'll hear about it when Krishna enters Dwarka. How Krishna is the lover of his devotees. And this factor of Krishna is so... And we've heard, Kunti Devi has already hinted at this. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namah. So this naughty Krishna, because Mother Yashoda loves Krishna, in the mood of a mother, Krishna becomes the most wonderful, wonderful, all-attractive child who knows just how to act to inflame her love so that Mother Yashoda is always captivated by the ecstasy of her loving relationship with Krishna. So she would tie him up. Mother Yashoda saw this, the monkeys, who took it. This is, of course, the explanation of the of Damodar Lila, Yasoda Damodar. Mother Yasoda saw that Krishna had broken the pots of butter and fed it to the monkeys. Mother Yasoda saw this, and out of her pure love, she wanted to make a show of punishment for her transcendental child. She took a rope and threatened the Lord that she would tie him up, as is generally done in an ordinary household. Seeing the rope in the hands of Mother Yasoda, the Lord bowed down his head and began weeping just like a child, and tears rolled down his cheeks, washing off the black ointment smeared about his beautiful eyes. This picture of the Lord is adored by Kunti Devi because she is conscious of the Lord's supreme position. He is feared often by fear personified. That means death. Everyone fears death. It is the personification of fear. Yet he who makes fear personified of frightened is afraid of his mother, who wanted to punish him just in an ordinary manner. Kunti was conscious of the exalted position of Krishna, whereas Yasoda was not. Therefore, Yasoda's position was more exalted than Kunti's. Mother Yasoda got the Lord as her child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. If Mother Yasoda had been conscious of the exalted position of the Lord, she would certainly have hesitated to punish the Lord. But she was made to forget this situation because the Lord wanted to make a complete gesture of childishness before the affectionate Yasoda. This exchange of love between the mother and the son was performed in a natural way, and Kunti, remembering the scene, was bewildered, and she could do nothing but praise the transcendental filial love. Indirectly, Mother Yasoda is praised for her unique position of love, for she could control even the all-powerful love, the all-powerful Lord, as her beloved child. The all-pervading, all-controlling, thunderbolt-throwing, creating universe creating Lord is running out of fear of Mother Yasoda. After having fed butter to the monkeys. And why is he doing this? Because Mother Yasoda has this loving mood towards him, and he's reciprocating. Because yad diyatad urugaya vibhavayanti tad tad pranayashe sadanugrahaya, that out of his mercy Krishna will come and reciprocate. Out of anugrahaya means out of his great, great, great mercy. According to how the devotee meditates upon Krishna, how the devotee loves Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates. This is also shown because he's raso vaisa. He is the reservoir of all rasa. He has all reciprocations with all living entities with him. Because non-devotees turn their back on Krishna, Krishna treats them equally. He lets the material energy deal with them. He turns their back on them in one sense. For the atheists, they don't believe in God, so he doesn't exist for them. He lets the material energy deal with them, and the material energy deals very, very heavily with them. Everyone is sentenced to death by the material energy. That's what they want. But the devotee is completely different. This is when Krishna enters the wrestling arena of Kamsa. All the different people there, all the different people have different relationships with him, so therefore they see him in different ways. Some see him as the most formidable enemy, others see him as death personified, some see him as the most attractive boy, some see him as a beloved son. Because he is everything to all people, but it depends on us. And that's what Prabhupada had said just previously, that partiality in receiving the Lord's mercy is relative to the recipient, and it is not due to the partiality of the all-merciful Lord. So all that Krishna does is meant to open us to our loving relationship with Him. From His side, it is there. From our side, Bahirmukh, back is turned. How wonderful. So why does Krishna act the way He does? It's very wonderful. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Krishna Kunti Devi.